Right now we're going to talk with Pat Murphy, who is with the Oberlin Heritage Center, the executive director, about some of the Oberlin history and some of the things that are going on. And you have a lot of living history. I mean, there's walks and tours.
We try to make history come alive for all ages and all audiences, and we do a lot of things both at our Heritage Center right across the street from here and also throughout the whole town. And we have some really exciting, fun activities coming up in the next few weeks, and love to tell you about one weekend in particular that's going to be very, very busy, and that is the weekend of November 9th, which is also College Parents Weekend. We'll have nonstop history walks and tours going on Saturday, and on Sunday we are working with First Church here in Oberlin, also up the street in a major historic building, to celebrate the dedication of a new Ohio historical marker, which will be placed in front of the church, honoring Antoinette Brown Blackwell, who was the first woman to become a minister in the United States. There'll be a special community-wide celebration and hymn sing at 3:00. Everyone's invited. It's free of charge at the church, followed by the dedication of the marker, which should be a really fun event. And there's details about that on our website as well.
Can you tell us, do you know the process of getting a historical marker?
Oh boy, do I ever, because we've gotten four or five of them for Oberlin over the years, including one for the Downtown Historic District where we're sitting right now, which is at the corner up at Main and College Streets. It involves completing a fairly extensive application documenting the significance and history of whatever the marker is being secured for, and then submitting that to the Ohio Historical Society, which has now been renamed the Ohio History Connection. They have a review panel that reviews the applications and makes decisions, I think, twice a year. And the cream of the crop applications can get a grant, which we were able to secure to pay for part of the cost of installing the marker here at First Church. So that shows they think that it's an important topic as well. And then the marker goes through various stages of editing and review and proofreading and so forth. And then it's manufactured at a company in Marietta, Ohio, and shipped to Oberlin, and it'll be installed at First Church.
So the process, I imagine, takes a couple of years?
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, this particular marker has been in the works in one way, shape, or form for almost 10 years, because there were various debates about, you know, where it should be located, what exactly it should say, et cetera, et cetera. But our actual application to the Ohio Historical Society for this particular marker was submitted probably about 10 months ago. So,
as many times as I've seen, there's even a site where you can kind of see all the historical markers in Ohio. They're all numbered, I guess, and they kind of tell you.
Yes, it's called www.remarkableohio.org, I believe. And you can go on there and search it for all kinds of things if you want to find the particular markers in your county or your area or whatever. And actually, we've had a number of visitors at the Heritage Center who are traveling throughout the state to see all the Ohio historical
because
markers.
Because they're historical markers for an event maybe that occurred there, mm-hmm. a person, mm-hmm. or
a theme, you know, yeah. all kinds of things. And not just ancient history, but more modern history as well. And I think the Ohio History Connection has been trying hard to make sure that we're representing everyone's history and not just, you know, the 19th century or whatever.
Right. And so, or what you'd say, the top 10, you know, the important people. There's other people that are important for different reasons that may get lost in history if not for
right.
a marker like this.
For example, there's one in Lorain for the tornado from 1923. And here in Oberlin, we have about five or six different markers now. And I think probably we have more per square inch for a town of our size than probably just about any community in Ohio. But, of course, that's because Oberlin is so important and so historically significant.
Says Pat Murphy, the executive director of the Oberlin Heritage Center.
Well, I believe what I do, you know.
Sure. And all you have to do is look at that. You mentioned Antoinette Brown Blackwell.
Yes.
The first woman ordained as a minister back in 1853. And we see that she was a graduate of Oberlin mm-hmm. College in 1847.
Right.
Who knew? I mean, I didn't know. And that is most impressive.
That is really, you know, national, international significance. And I think a lot of people don't know. And it will be really great to have that marker right out in front of First Church on Main Street where tourists can check it out and local residents will become more aware of that. And we've been trying to do more in recent years with interpreting Oberlin women's history. And actually, we have a new Oberlin Women's History Walk that we launched earlier this year that was developed for us with the help of an AmeriCorps member, and she's going to be offering that tour the same weekend that we're doing the marker dedication. So that's something special that we'll be doing on Saturday, November 8th at 1 or Sunday, November 9th at 11, but it does require reservations. But it's a great crash course in why Oberlin is such a unique place in the field of women's history.
When you're putting a walk together, what are things that you're keeping in mind just to make it interesting and also mm-hmm. wanting the people, you know, to continue on the walk and mm-hmm. putting it in a confined enough area so that it's not miles and miles of walking?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked me that question. We've developed a whole series of guided history walks on different themes, and each one encompasses about an hour to hour and 15 minute or so walk around different parts of the community. And each guide has a notebook that shows historic images related to the sites that people see on the walking tour. So for example, you might see a photo of what was on that site previously, and then you can see what's there today, or a photo of a notable person who had something to do with the history of the site. And these tours have been very popular. We just recently got a federal grant to to develop a couple of new tours that will be done on a tablet, like an iPad. So you can borrow the iPad or download the tour and go out and do it by yourself on your own time if you don't want to go with a guide or if that doesn't fit within your schedule. So we're trying to appeal to new audiences and adapt new technology to helping to tell Oberlin's stories.
It's great to have the tours, but if you're seeing the same people on the tour all the time, you're thinking, I'm not getting the word out to as many people that could learn something like that. You have a book here that you were mentioning before
yes.
we got on the air. We interviewed the author of this book, Bonnets to Boardrooms. Talk about, I guess, the special recognition for this book now?
Yes, this is a really great book, and we are very proud that we just got a statewide history outreach award from the Ohio Local History Alliance for the book. And Jeannie Vanek, who compiled the stories in this book about women, 20th century women in Oberlin, will be speaking for us at a program at Kendall at Oberlin on Thursday, November 20th at 7:15 p.m. And that book is the result of over 30 years of volunteers working hard to do oral history interviews with women who from all parts of our community. So it's a remarkable compilation of stories from over 50 women who span the 20th century.
We were talking before a little bit about the historic district on here. I guess, is this building we in part of the historic district?
Yes, this building is in the downtown historic district. The Heritage Center did the nomination for the district, and it was listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 2003. And it encompasses most of the buildings on South Main from College to Vine Street, and then the buildings on the south side of College Street within one block of Main Street. And it's been fun over the years since the district was nominated to see a number of major renovations that have taken place within the district, and the Heritage Center has also enjoyed having a role in helping with planning for some of those. Most notably would be perhaps the bank building just adjacent to us here, which was renovated as the Lormet Credit Union and is now Lorain National Bank. It was restored to its 1949 appearance, so it's an example of mid-century modern architecture. Also, the Heritage Center helped with the Apollo Theater renovation planning and securing tax credits for that major project. And more recently, we've been involved with renovating a building just down the street here on the other side of the street, that where the Mandarin Restaurant and Lupita's is, which you would not have known 2 years ago, but underneath all that plastic siding and fake brick siding, volunteers unearthed the original brick facade of what was the Clareman Ford dealership and auto garage built in 1929. And we are gradually implementing a staged renovation of that building to help it be a more attractive feature of South Main and also to function better for the tenants and users of the facility.
When you renovate these buildings or other contractors come in and do that, have they ever found anything extra special in the walls or in the ceiling or anything like that? Are you aware of anything like that?
Oh, well, I have a great story with the Vineway building that I was just speaking about. You probably know there's a barber shop in the Midas Muffler building just south of that. And we had about 20 volunteers helping to remove the plastic siding off the south side of the building when we first started this project. And as they were ripping off siding, we uncovered a sign that said Sacrete Concrete. It was from when the building had been used as a hardware store. And the barber came out and said, "I can't believe this." And we said, "Well, what?" And he said, "Well, when he worked for the hardware store as a kid in high school, one of his jobs had been to go out there and put that sign up." So he was just amazed, and that sign is still there, so check it out.
Job well done on his part.
It was held up, didn't it?
And now he works right next door, so that's kind of cool.
It's kind of neat. You never know what history is kind of buried around here, but it's kind of your job in a way for a Heritage Center to keep things alive and let people know about sort of things.
And
like that.
The other fun part of that story is he actually lived in the Monroe House, where our office is headquartered at one point in time, so he and his family have shared with us some of their memories of what it was like to live in that house before it became a site for historic tours and our office and our museum store.
Great. Well, you do rely on the families and the people who live here to tell you how things were, or photographs that they may have taken.
Absolutely.
Kind of help you see what things look like from the past. But if people want to find out more, I guess oberlinheritage.org. It's a good place for them to check out, especially the different activities coming up in November. Pat Murphy, Executive Director of Oberlin Heritage Center. Thanks for coming in and sharing some of the great stories. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed it.